Welcome to the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. If you're looking to get more out of your Shenandoah Valley experience, then this is the podcast for you. You'll meet interesting people, the comedians that perform here, and find out more about what you can do and see. Whether you live here or plan to visit, listen to explore what helps make up our unique slice of heaven. Now here's your host, Dawn Davis Womack.
Hello, laughers. I'm excited to introduce you to these hilarious comedians. Christopher Cantrell is based out of Richmond, has hosted several comedy open mics at Brothers Craft Brewing, and is known for telling mostly non-sequitur, wordplay-based one-liners and loves hyphens. Mike Moran is a Baltimore-based comedian, podcaster, and writer whose style is best described as deadpan, stupid, smart. He hosts the Confessional podcast and performs all over the DMV area. Among others, Mike has performed with Michael Ian Black, Creed Breton, and Robert Klein, interviewed Patton Oswalt and Tom Arnold, and written for Skeptic Magazine and Hard Times. Kenny Lee Robinson, a.k.a. Cornbread the Comic, is an award-winning comedian. Cornbread has appeared coast to coast in comedy clubs, churches, corporate events, political fundraisers, and more. His clean, energy-filled comedy is hilarious and memorable. Kenny is a three-time Inspirational Country Music Association Comedy of the Year and LOL Gospel Comedy Association Spirit of Laughter Award winner. Welcome to the show, fellas.
Hey. Thanks for having us.
Yes, it's so wonderful. I'm excited to have each and every one of you on here. You have performed for X2 Comedy before, and we're getting ready to have you come back real soon. And I thought it would be a great opportunity to have the listeners get to know you a little bit more, whether they make the show or not, because you'll be coming back around again and they could see you somewhere else. So I'd like to start with a little bit about how each of you got started in comedy and how long you've been doing it. We'll start with you, Christopher.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I got started in comedy. Actually, my first ever performance was a talent show at a community college. And it actually went pretty well, which is not what I had heard your first time performing jokes was supposed to be like. I did a lot of open mics right after that, not for comedy though. These were like just open mics and bars and things. And, excuse me. But yeah, I've been doing it for almost 6 whole years now. And, it's been fun. I love doing it.
Nice. Thank you for that. How about you, Mike? Yeah. How about you?
I started, I think just over 10 years ago, I took an improv class. I had no, you know, ambitions of being a comedian or anything. And, I was like pretty good at the improv, which is weird because I'm never good at anything right away. And then like Christopher, my first stand-up open mic went shockingly well. And I said, okay, maybe I can do something cool with my life. Cause I was at like a really low point in my life. And I was kind of like resigning myself to like living just like a blue collar life of misery. And then this was like my new hope. Been doing it ever since, kind of not always I've never stopped doing it, but like sometimes I'm more consistent than others.
Okay. And how long did you mention that, or did I miss it?
I think a little over a decade now.
Okay. Okay. That's great. Okay, thank you. And how about you, Cornbread?
Well, I've been doing comedy now for 15 years, but I didn't get started till I was almost 50. I was working up in the D.C. area. I'd been doing quite a bit of motivational speaking for VDOT, where I was working at the time, and spoke at most of their conferences. And I found that the more jokes I told at the beginning, the more they would listen to the rest. And eventually it kind of migrated to the point that I just told jokes the whole time and didn't do the motivational speaking. So I was sent to Northern Virginia to work for a 4-month temporary assignment. And I found out that the DC Improv had stand-up comedy classes. So I did 6 weeks of stand-up comedy classes, followed up by 4 weeks of joke writing classes. And did a couple of graduation shows and got to headline both those. And the guy that I was taking my classes from, he's a Vegas comedian now. He said, you know, you're good, but before people are going to buy tickets, you need to do about 200 open mics.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah. I didn't know how I would do 200 open mics living in the Shenandoah Valley of Virginia. But things worked out. But things worked out. I wound up staying 3 years in Nova, and I started doing 4 open mics a week, Monday night, Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night. Week in, week out, I'd knock out 4, sometimes 5 open mics a week. And after about 200 shows, you either get good or you quit, one or the other. Open mics is really hard work. And I did learn that I didn't want to do comedy clubs all the time. That is a hard life. And I have great respect for the people that do the tours of the comedy zones and up and down the East Coast and living out of a suitcase. That's really hard work. So I migrated more towards corporate and church and charity comedies because you can sleep in your own bed. Generally, you don't get heckled at a corporate event, and they tend to pay better. So that's sort of how I migrated over into the areas that I'm in now.
Yeah, I really like that. There are a lot of road comics out there to have total respect for.
They work really hard.
They do. Yeah, we've had a few on our stages come as far as LA. And it's, you know, I got one young comic that's done quite a few shows for us who has slept in his car many a night.
I've done studying him. I know exactly what you're talking about. He is a road warrior.
He is a road warrior. Yeah, absolutely. Mike, have you been on the road a lot like that in comedy clubs?
No, I never really became a big club guy, just like Cornbread would say. That doesn't seem like my thing. Every now and then I'll start to dabble in it a little bit, and then I'll be like, yeah. Nah, I don't want to. So I'm more of an underground kind of guy. I mean, I do a little traveling here and there. I've never been on like an official tour or anything. But, you know, I'll go pretty much where I'm asked. But I'm not trying to get in with the club circuit.
Yeah. How about you, Christopher? Where are you trying to?
No, unfortunately not yet. I haven't had the opportunity. Okay. Anxious for it though. Would love to. But looking forward to it. I often that was like my favorite part, looking forward to when I was first getting into comedy. Mm-hmm. Cause I listened to a lot of comedians and they always talked about how the road was so awful, and that made me want to do it for some reason.
Yeah, the glutton for punishment. There's nothing wrong with that. You're a young man. I'm all for it. And speaking of, influences in terms of what we decide to do and which direction we take our lives, what comedy influences have played a part on your all's career in developing your own styles? Start with you, Christopher.
Well, as far as comedians I'm most similar to Nick Thune, especially because he plays guitar and does the same sort of non-sequitur one-liners. Mike Birbiglia is who got me into comedy. I would say Kyle Kinane is who like inspires me. Like I listen to Kyle Kinane material. I'm like, I gotta come up with something, you know, really, really motivates me. He's just so hilarious and just so... he has the best stories and it's so loose and it's just, it's great. I wish I could do it, but no, I've got the one-liners. So.
Yeah, you do. I love your one-liners. They're amazing. You guys got to come out and check Christopher's one-liners out. I'm telling you, when he doesn't say a few, we really, really love, we're like, oh, darn it. So we can't wait till he comes to the show. I hope he says the ones we want the next time. Those are all great. We appreciate that about you, Christopher. How about you, Mike? What are your comedy influences?
I would say David Letterman is really the one I got into as a kid. I was pretty shocked by such an alternative. Like I figured he was just another like late night old guy, you know, kind of, you know, just kind of like older people humor. And I was shocked by how alternative and weird he was. And that just really did it for me. And, you know, I got into, you know, I'd watch all the stand up specials on like MTV and Comedy Central and everything growing up. But I will say, like, I think most of my comedic influences aren't really other stand-ups, you know. I don't know why, but I just like I don't know. I just kind of take more from other comedy media. And also I honestly rarely ever watch stand up anymore because I'm around it so much, except for this last year. But I've still just had so much of it in my life that I rarely feel like, you know, watching a stand up special on Netflix or something like that.
Yeah, I'm interested. You mentioned comedy media being more of an influence for you than the stand up. So what kind of examples can you share with us?
I would say the broadest one is just The Simpsons. Just growing up, that was like, I guess, kind of my real intro before David Letterman to like kind of alternative comedy, you know, like not super weird, but, you know, definitely different. And yeah, that was like a, you know, that blew my mind when it came out. And I just thought it was brilliant from such a young age. And other than that, I like there's a comic strip called The Perry Bible Fellowship. Have you ever heard of that?
No, tell me about it.
It's so good. It's okay. it's almost like the equivalent of one-liners in cartoon form.
Ah, Christopher, do you know this? Do you know about
that? No, I haven't heard of it, but it sounds okay. Like my alley.
Yes, no, it's awesome.
Okay, yeah. So tell us more, Mike, about that. Where do we find this comic strip? You know, where do you?
You type in Perry Bible Fellowship and you find it. It used to be in a lot of
Google, you know, Dawn.
It used to be in a lot of remember those like newspapers that were like weekly or monthly newspapers that they would have around the cities and stuff. Yeah. What were those called? How soon we forget. This was just like a few years ago. Now they're like ancient history.
All our brains are mush after COVID.
Like we'd have the city paper up here in Baltimore. Yeah. Yeah. And it would be in that and some other things. Okay. And yeah.
I'll have to check that out. I'll send it to you. Oh, please do. Please do. How about you, Cornbread? What are your comedy influences?
Well, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and of course the influences back then were Flip Wilson, TV show, Hee-Haw.
Yes.
I had every 8-track tape of Red Fox and Jerry Clower.
He's not dating himself.
Yes. you know, you couldn't just rewind. You know, you had to wait for like an hour for a joke that you wanted to hear again. You know, you couldn't hit replay. But as I started studying comedy after taking classes, one or two people that sort of helped me develop my style were not a well-known comedian, but was really big on the circuit, was Tim Wilson. Mm. He used to be one of the call-in comedians on the John Boy and Billy show. But Tim Wilson passed away a couple years ago in his early 50s. But he was a great storyteller, stand-up comedian. And that's sort of the style that I've developed. You've seen me.
Yes, and I love it. Yes.
So the people that I like to watch, currently I love James Gregory. I like Leanne Morgan,
females,
Larry the Cable Guy, Jeff Foxworthy, that are, you know, sort of the storyteller, that, you know, you have a lot of punchlines in the story. You build in small punchlines all along the way so that you don't make the audience wait for the big payoff just at the end. So, you know, I've tried to develop my sets so that one setup gets 6, 7, 8 punchlines.
Nice.
Because people don't want to just listen to your setups. So you've got to have punchlines throughout the setup with the big payoff at the end. And so I look for comedians that use that style. You know, Larry the Cable Guy. Larry the Cable Guy will make you laugh 6 times before he gets to his big payoff punchline, because he has learned to seed smaller punchlines throughout the entire setup.
Yes, absolutely. Well, Mike Birbiglia is a storyteller comic with that kind of style also. I really like him. Yeah, I love the storyteller comics. It's so much fun. You get to learn so much about them, and it takes you on an entire ride. Yeah, I love that about you.
I heard a good one on Ron White. If you watch the Blue Collar Comedy Store, you know, he always tells the tater salad story. You know, they call me tater salad. And he told that joke, you know, five nights a week for 2 years when Blue Collar Comedy Tour was touring.
Yeah.
And so when he finally went out on his own, he thought, you know, people have heard this. They don't want to hear tater salad. It's a 9-minute bit. And so the first night out on the tour, he doesn't tell the joke. So he comes back to his bus and there's this big biker dude and his big biker girl waiting for him. So he's thinking, you know, he's reaching his pocket to get his Sharpie. He's going to sign an autograph for him, give him a CD or something. And the big biker dude says, "You owe me $150, fat boy." And Ron's like, "Excuse me." He said, "You didn't tell a tater salad joke, and I paid $75 for 2 tickets, and I didn't get to hear a tater salad joke. You either give me $150, or I'm whipping your ass right here in the parking lot."
Oh, my goodness.
So Ron said he just reached in his wallet and got off $150. And he said, "I just decided I'm going to tell tater salad till I die because he didn't want to see me."
No, it's in every show. You know, that's a good segue to a life lesson I've learned, listeners. That is, flexibility is your friend and expectation is your enemy. So remember that every time you come to a show. Word to the wise. Well, that was awesome. I appreciate that. I would like to ask each of you, how do you come up with your comedy material? And what does your process look like from the idea, which us comics call the premise, to the stage? And I will start with you, Cornbread, if I can.
If you follow me on Facebook, you know, I try to put a joke on every day. And so when you do a Facebook joke, especially if you use their background, you've only got about 100 characters that you can type in that you've got to. Basically, all you can do on that medium is just give up the punchline. Okay. So I start with the punchline and work backwards. I take punchlines and then I start looking for a true life event. You've heard my love at first story. That's my tater salad, you know, every show. So I actually had the punchline first. About 90% of that joke is true about meeting my wife. But what I did was then I took the true story of meeting my wife and took about 7 or 8 different punchlines and then wove them into the story. So generally, I take punchlines and then develop the setup. So I actually sort of do it the opposite. I create a setup to bring me to these punchlines that I've already written.
I really like that. Didn't Dave Chappelle, doesn't he do that or did that? He just wrote a bunch of punchlines and just worked backwards. Isn't that right? So, am I remembering that wrong, comics?
You're probably right. And a lot of comics do that. And you know, that's the way I do is I work from my punchline back to the setup.
Yeah. I like that. How about you, Mike? What's your process?
Well, I'm thinking I should actually probably steal Cornbread's idea now that I hear it. Because
a gift, I give it to you.
Thank you. Because a lot of my jokes, I do test out a lot of jokes on Facebook to see, you know, what kind of response they get. Exactly. And a lot of my jokes are very short. But to be honest, outside of that, I have not found it yet. I'm 10 years in and I'm still searching for my formula. I sit down and make myself write for a certain amount of time, but there's no formula to it. And I've actually been spending, and other than that, I just collect things as I think of them throughout the day, put them in my phone. I found that to be the most important thing, because you think you're going to remember it, you're not going to remember
it. Definitely not going to remember it. No, put it somewhere in the phone, write it down, do something.
For sure.
Yeah.
But I've been spending the quarantine actually kind of like, since I have the time, kind of like meditating on and giving myself the time to think about, you know, what is comedy and like, what do I want to do with it? What kind of energy is there? You know, kind of like searching for what is that creativity that does that, you know, because you can get into that mode sometimes.
Right.
But you can't, you know, for me, I can't put myself into it. So I'm still searching, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's very organic. And I feel that as we evolve, or at least for me, it kind of morphs into a process. I think Cornbread's mastered it for us. But you know, I'm an earlier comic, too. I'm only 4.5 years in, and I feel like it's still creating my own process, too. How about you, Christopher?
For my one-liners, usually what it is I find like an everyday thing kind of humorous, just as is. Mm-hmm. But I try and flip what somebody's expectations would be of me talking about that thing. Mm-hmm. Like a very recent joke is some people don't like name tags. I really like name tags because even if I forget my name, somebody else can remind me.
Yeah. Nice.
So, I know. So that one, I love his brain. I like how it works.
Thank you. And that one, and you know, it's just name tags are humorous for some reason to me. And so I just thought it'd be kind of funny to fit that in there somewhere. But if I ever try and talk about a subject for longer than just one thing, usually it's just being kind of strange, you know? It's I don't know how quite to describe that process yet, because I'm still working on expounding jokes. So it's kind of fun to figure out what I have to do to make it funny if it's longer.
I love flip jokes. I love when you take the audience one way and they know exactly what you're going to say. And yep. Then you flip it on them. And that's the biggest payoff. That's my favorite type of joke, whether I do it or somebody else does it. That's my favorite. And your deal right just there with the name tags, you know, most people hate the hello, my name is, you know, and so that's great.
Yeah, it is great. I love that. Now, you're welcome. Now, listen, you know, we get asked a lot the question, you know, what do? You say comedian. They find that out. What's the next thing they often say? Tell me a joke.
Tell me a joke.
Yeah, tell me a joke. So I'd love to hear from each of you how you respond to that question. And we'll start with you, Christopher. How do you respond to that? Or do you have a few different responses?
I have a few go-tos. And for me, it's easy because I got the one-liners. So it's really not a pain for me. I can do it like as I'm sprinting away from the meeting. But usually I go for like my worst puns. So my two go-to responses right now are I just bought a jacket for the next time I go hiking. It's my trailblazer.
Yeah.
And I accidentally put the wrong dressing on my salad. Been a regret.
I like both of those. Very nice. Very
good job, Chris.
Clap for that one.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. How about you, Mike? How do you approach that?
that's when I realized that I apparently have no jokes. Like I just have. I don't know how that works, but like every single time, I'm like, and I keep telling myself. And this is for a decade that I need to like have a few go-tos like Christopher does. But I usually just end up being like, well, you're going to have to come see me. Yeah. I do have like a few one-liners, but for some reason, a lot of times they work live, but they just get blank stares when I do them one-on-one. So I usually tell people like, it doesn't really translate one-on-one for some reason. Mm-hmm. I'm really not that funny, like person to person very often, but I have like a few one-liners that I go to. Like, if I could choose one superpower, I'd probably go with China.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Good one. I like that.
Good one. Yeah.
Oh, a new one that I came up with that I'm very proud of. I haven't really gotten it to test yet, but anybody have cheap parents? Anybody grow up with Play-Gos and public television? Anybody?
Yeah.
I remember one year around Halloween, I told my mom I'd like to be a skeleton, and she was like, "Well, can't you just be patient?" Eventually, you're going to be spending a lot of Halloweens as a skeleton. Why don't you enjoy your flesh while you
have it? I like that one. I like that one too.
That's so great.
Yes.
I love it. Those are great. How about you, Cornbread? How do you
feel? I have a way of doing it that seems like I'll just do it. You asked me to tell you the joke. We just met, Dawn.
Yeah. Oh, tell me a joke, Cornbread.
Well, Dawn, I would, but, you know, we got Christopher and Mike here, and they don't know me very well. You see, when I start talking, people just naturally assume things about me. Like Mike, I can sort of tell by the expression on his face. He's thinking right now to himself, he's saying, this old boy's illiterate. Well, I'll have you know, Mike, my parents was married 3 weeks before I was born, so I'm not illiterate at all, okay? And now Christopher's thinking his parents was married 3 weeks before he was born. How could they even know each other? Listen, Chris, they've been first cousins all their life. They didn't have to be married a long time, you know? You know, you know, now y'all are judging me. I can tell Dawn's got that judgy face on because I'm inbred, you know, but you know, inbred people have certain advantages. I was born with six toes on each foot. So I was first kid in our trailer park where I could count to 22. So, 23 when I'm naked. So I do something like that. But here's the key. When they ask for a joke, they've asked me for a favor. They now owe me a favor. I keep business cards with me all the time. I hand them two or three business cards. I say, hey, you've heard my jokes now. Do me a favor. Pass these along to, you know, if it's a person, it's a business person, you know, pass these along to your HR department. I do motivational speaking and corporate. If it's a Christian, I say, you know, hey, could you pass these along to your pastor? And I usually will get, just by passing out business cards, I'll get 10 to 12 shows a year. You know, say I pick up, you know, $300 to $500 per show, you know, I pass out usually about 1,000 business cards a year. Cost me about $25-$35. I'll easily pick up $3,000 to $4,000 in shows off those business cards. So when people ask for a joke, I give them the little bit about, you know, being inbred, being, you know, illiterate, whatever, give them some business cards, and invariably I get some shows.
That's brilliant.
I'm stealing all of Cornbread's ideas tonight. Some good ones.
I know, right?
Old people have been doing it. I've just been doing it long enough. I've made enough mistakes that I've learned that you'd be surprised. People actually want to help you. Yes. Most people do.
Yeah.
You may not realize it yet, but you know, the fact that you're a comedian, you're doing something that they wish they could do. That you know, most people would rather die. You know, people fear death more than they fear public speaking more than they do death. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you're doing something that they wish they could do, and I found that most people, if you give them some business cards and ask them to pass them along, they will. And so, you know, it's cheap. You know, Vistaprint runs those 40% off deals. And, you know, you buy 1,000, costs you, you know, $35-$40. I put them everywhere. Every Gideon Bible of every motel room I've been in the last 15 years has a Cornbread the Comic business card in the Gideon Bible.
There's another idea, Mike. Yeah. Wow. You should be teaching marketing, business marketing, the comics, Cornbread. I think
most of the time you just ask. I was in Kentucky 2 weeks ago, did four shows down there, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. At one of them, it was a church with about 20 singers. There was only two comedians on the show. After the show was over, I went over to the pastor. I said, you know, he told me I did a good job. I said, hey, I'm going to be back in Nashville in August. I've got to come down. I'm going to actually be doing the warm-up comedian for the Huckabee show. And I said, you know, I'll just be an hour away. Could I come back to your church? I noticed y'all have a Sunday night service. Can I come back and do the Sunday night service for a love offering? And he said, sure, we'd love to have you. And so, you know, if I hadn't asked, I wouldn't have got the show. He wasn't going to ask me. I asked him. He gave me a show. So now I'm going to be in Nashville anyway. This is up in Madisonville, Kentucky, you know, an hour and 15 minutes away. So while I'm in Nashville for the weekend, I pick up another show. You know, Huckabee pays really good. This show won't pay as much, but, you know, hey, it's better than sitting in the hotel on Sunday night.
Yeah, I like that. You know what? If you never ask the question, the answer is always no.
Yeah, like that's actually something I have learned that I try to employ. It's like, if you want something, just ask. If you want to interview someone, you want to work with someone, you want to be part of a show, just contact the person and ask, you know. That's actually how I met Dawn. I just saw her poster around Harrisonburg. And
great.
Just found her.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And you've done several shows for us, and you'll be doing several more. So I really like our connection. Yeah, this is this is great. I want to know now is, we've talked about experience, you know, we have different years of experience in comedy between us all, but there has to be some really cool, memorable moments so far, no matter how many years you've been doing it. I'd like to ask each of you, what's been the most memorable moment? Or most memorable bomb, whichever one you want. We'll start with you, Cornbread.
Okay. I've had this something similar to this has happened several times, but the first time it happened, I knew why I do comedy. I was asked to do a 50-year class reunion down near Charlotte, North Carolina, high school. They were having a graduation for all the graduates that had graduated in the 50s and 60s because of their age, you know, the size of the group had shrunk down, that just 1 year wouldn't be enough. So there was about 200 people there. And they had a dinner. After the dinner, I get up, I do 45 minutes. And after it's over, I'm shaking hands. And this lady comes up to me, probably, mid-70s, early 70s. And she said, I need to tell you something. And I said, what's that, ma'am? And she said, my husband passed away two weeks ago. And I said, I'm very sorry. And she said, no, don't be. She said, he got cancer about 2 months ago after we had already bought tickets to come to this, that he was diagnosed with cancer. And he only lasted about 6 weeks. And he passed away 2 weeks ago, and I wasn't going to come, but friends and family encouraged me to come on. And she said, I have not laughed since the day the doctor told me that my husband had cancer. And she said, you started me laughing with your first joke, and I laughed nonstop for 45 minutes. She said, I want to thank you because I really needed this laughter. Wow. And I knew then, that's why I do comedy, not for the check, not for the awards or anything else. All of us, we're not going to, you know, I drive 4 hours to do a 1 hour show and then turn around and drive back 4 hours to get home. I've drove to Philadelphia, done a 30 minute set and drove all the way back 5 hours each way. You don't do it for the checks. You don't do it for the attaboys. You do it because you get to make people laugh. And I've had that now happen numerous times where people have told me that, you know, there's been a death in the family, there's been an illness or whatever, and I made them laugh. And that is the most memorable story that I've got. It tops everything else.
That gave me goosebumps. Comedy is healing.
It is.
A great life reset button. Yeah, for us all. So, guys, who wants to go after that?
Come on, tell us about the little girl then. Right.
No one's ever been healed by my jokes. So,
mine make people sicker generally.
But seriously, though, Mike, how about you? What's been?
Just real quick with what Cornbread said, that's what I try to remind myself. Like when I, you know, get frustrated or I get like, you know, what is the point of this? Or like everything's been written before. What is even the point of me? Do other people can do it better? I just remember it's about the whoever's in the audience experiencing joy
for a few seconds at a time.
Right.
You know, that's all it is. Whether they're, even if they don't want to, you know, you're going through a bad time and somebody makes you laugh for a few seconds, you know, that's all it is. But I'll say my most memorable one, and mine is way more shallow than Cornbread's. it's also definitely a humble brag, but, you know, when I started comedy, I was like, I was just in a really bad, depressed place, just kind of existentially lost, you know, and I found this thing, comedy, but then it was scary because I didn't want to put all my eggs into it and get all my hopes up and everything. And, you know, and it was like, how do you even make a living doing that? You know, it's just a lot of fear, a lot of conflicting feelings. And somehow the end of my first year was the first time I got to open for Michael Ian Black. And he not only told me I did a good job when I got off stage and like really kind of meant it, you know, he went on stage and ranted for 5 minutes about what an asshole I was for doing so well.
Oh, that's great.
He didn't like it.
Great compliment.
He was like cussing me out, and then he was even like, "Yeah, I said nice job to him backstage. I didn't mean it." and my brother-in-law got it on tape, so that was like my Rocky moment, where it's like this thing that I was so scared about and like so insecure about, and but at the same time so hopeful that maybe this I could actually do this, you know, and just like it, that was just like kind of my moment, you know.
I like awesome. That.
Great story.
I love Thank that you. Story. So good. Yes. So good. How about you, Christopher?
Probably when I saw Mike Birbiglia, I forget which, I want to say it was the new one. I saw him when he was in Maryland. And I think it's the new one where pretty early on in the set he has a pretty long bit on late people, because his wife's a late person, and you know, it's hilarious. It's really, really good. And I kid you not, people came to the show 45 minutes into his set. Not even like, catching like, you know, 10 minutes into a set or whatever, like almost end of the show. And he immediately calls it out and just spends like probably 10, 15 minutes talking to them about, you know, why they're bad people and, you know, stuff like that. It was great. It was great to watch.
Yeah, isn't it wonderful to see pros like that, you know, that are big names, handle situations? I'm always in awe of that. It's incredible. Yeah. I love that story too. So good. I love it.
I love when comedians do that. And I forget the gentleman's name, but there's a guy that used to be on Carson a lot. And he was at one of the seminars that I went to on comedy. And he was saying that one of the things that a really good comic does is he doesn't make it a presentation. He makes it a conversation. And if you think about it, all the comics we like, when they're on stage, it's not like they're on stage. It's like they're sitting on the couch with us sharing these stories. Because if you think about it, when you've been around with your friends, you're sitting on the couch, you've had a few beers, and you're just, you get almost laugh hysteria just sharing stories. When a comedian can do that from the stage and create that type environment that he's having a conversation with the audience as opposed to a presentation to the audience, he's with the audience. That's the key. That's the guys that are the, you know, the five-star comics.
Yeah, it's about the connection.
It's connecting with the audience.
Connecting with the audience, and then they feel it. Yeah. I love that. Oh, my gosh. Well, we have all been kind of on a little bit of a hiatus of sorts with this COVID last year. And it's looked different, you know, for different comics, but depending on just what's been going on in their lives, if their family's been affected by COVID, their goals over that time. I'd like to hear from each of you what that period looked like for you and your comedy and your craft. And then did you do any outdoor shows, drive-ins, and Zoom shows? And what were those experiences like? We will start with you, Cornbread.
All right. I had just done, I had been down to Bristol and done some shows the end of January. I went down to the Virginia Beach area, did some Valentine's Day shows, and had a pretty full schedule, probably had 30 or 40 events coming up in 2020 already when March rolled around. And of course, you know, all that went, you know, everything went away. During the time, I just did other things. I've done, you know, I do construction consulting. So I've done that to fill my time. Actually, today I just finished a project up in Hamilton, Virginia, right outside of Leesburg. We just finished up today, and I'll be heading back home tomorrow. But so I've done a lot of consulting work in the last year. Did a few shows. I've done a few. Actually, got paid a couple times to do birthday parties on Zoom. And do entertainment, but done a lot. I do the Maurice Brown Show every other Monday with four or five other comics. We do a online Bible study with jokes, and
that sounds fun.
It does sound fun. I've auditioned for a new streaming service called SaltFlix, and I'm going to have a somewhat of a role there at some point when they get kicked off and get going. Like I say, 2 weeks ago, did my first live shows since 2020 when I went to Kentucky. I got, in addition to your show next month, I've got the 3-day comedy conference in Triangle, Virginia, near D.C. coming up June 24th, 25th, and 26th, where we have 3 days of comedy comedians getting together from all over the country. We've got about 20 some comedians, about 50 or 60 comedians coming from about 20 different states. And I'll be teaching a seminar called the How Now, Wow, Vow of Comedy. be one of the seminars taught there. And then I've got shows in, so I got 4 days in Gatlinburg in August, followed by the Huckabee Show, and then back to Kentucky, and then I'm be in Louisiana in September for a week. So things are
picking up.
People want to get out and see live entertainment again. Yeah. The shows we did in Kentucky were a lot of people and nobody wearing masks and nobody social distancing. So that was nice to see again.
Yes, it is. That's cool. How about you, Mike? What's it been like for you?
Well, first of all, I just wanted to take note that I just noticed that for Southerners, everything's an area, you know, like you don't go to Virginia Beach, you go to the Virginia Beach area, Pennsylvania area.
Oh, that's very true. That's very true.
I just noticed that. I haven't done a whole lot. I'll be honest. I kind of liked the break. You know, I've actually had kind of a rough few years with stand up. Success-wise, it's gone better than ever, but there's some interpersonal kind of things that made me feel a little weird about it. So I was kind of ready for a break, and you know, I've done a few here and there. I did your show, Dawn, and I think Bridgewater, right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And a couple other outdoor shows here and there. I'm doing in 3 days. I'm opening for Shane Torres in Baltimore at an outdoor show. I think it just sold out, actually.
Nice. Congratulations.
I'm happy about that.
That's great.
And I'm gonna try to bring my charity show back this summer. I've done it over Zoom a few times, but I want to try to get like an outdoor version. I'm still on the fence as to whether I should do indoor shows or not this summer.
Yeah, I think do what you're comfortable with doing for sure. Yeah. Right now. How about you, Christopher?
I did comedy. I moved to Richmond right before everything shut down, February last year. And everything shut down like March. I had done comedy like maybe 3 or 4 before that. And I only did it twice after everything shut down, once in Harrisonburg and once in Charlottesville. And then I didn't really want to do it until I was fully vaxxed, which it's been a little while now. So I've done 3 open mics, but I haven't done it in a long time, and it shows. And I need to get out there and do it much more often. Because, yeah, definitely need to work some things out, you know?
Absolutely. Flex the muscles.
Of course.
That's true. Yeah, we're getting ready to go live again. More and more is happening. I'm excited about it. And I want to know what you are most excited. What are you most looking forward to in getting back and doing more live shows again? We'll start with you, Christopher.
I'm most excited for the open mic that I host in Harrisonburg at Brothers Craft Brewing, because that's going to be a monthly thing every third Thursday. So I'm very excited to get that going again on a regular basis. I'm also really excited for this farm gig, to be honest. I'm really talked it up. I'm just excited to be there.
Nice. Yeah. Oh, we're excited to have you for sure. Absolutely. And before I forget though, let me ask, when you're doing the open mic at Brothers Craft Brewing starting the third Thursday, when is the kickoff for that coming up? What's the date?
The date is the 27th, next Thursday. It's going to be an hour of paid comics up front and an open mic for the last hour. So people are not only putting together their best stuff, but also you get to see some people just try comedy. So it's really entertaining.
Okay. And so this is an opportunity for anybody who's listening who might want to try their hand in comedy and live in the Shenandoah Valley area near Harrisonburg. You could go to Christopher Cantrell's open mic and give it a try. It's very supportive.
Absolutely.
Right? Very supportive. Absolutely. People will be very accepting of whatever you try to do. Wouldn't you agree, Christopher?
Of course.
And so how many minutes do they get? What's the sign up process look like? Can you speak on that just a second?
Definitely. It would be 5 minutes unless you absolutely don't have 5 minutes. If you just want to try it and you only have 1 minute, 2 minutes less, that's totally fine too. And you can show up either at Brothers Craft Brewing before the show, or you can even reach out to me through social medias, which I think we're going to do that later. So I'll just wait until then.
Okay, that sounds good. All right. So think about that out there. If any of you ever wanted to try it and you live in our area, that's a great, wonderful way to try. And I show up at those open mics too, because I'm always looking for new talent. And if you've got some talent and I could give you an open spot on a paid show, not necessarily open spots are necessarily paid, but what I'm saying is there's an opportunity to bring up and raise up more comics here. And I would just encourage you to give it a try. You know,
that's how I started, right? Yeah, I was at an open mic and you saw me and you're like, you know what? Yep. I'll pay him to do some comedy. So, and now I'm on a podcast. So.
See? There we go. Creating a community of laughers here in Virginia. It's why it's called Virginia's for Laughers. Oh, my goodness. All right, Mike, you tell me what you're most looking forward to in doing live shows again after this. Sorts.
To be a total suck up, I am also very much looking forward to the upcoming farm show.
Yeah.
And I really mean that. All the X2 shows I've done have been excellent so far. Always a lot of fun. I don't think I've had one bad moment in any of those. So I'm looking forward to that. I'll be honest, I'm nervous. I'm anxious about getting back on stage, you know. But it's good for me ultimately, you know. It is kind of part of my therapy in life is to face my fears and get up there. And so I'm looking forward to that feeling of walking off the stage again after a good set, you know.
Absolutely. I haven't ever seen a bad set from you, Mike.
You haven't seen that many sets.
Yeah, well, I laugh every time. I laugh every time. How about you, Cornbread? What are you looking forward to most in the tournament? Because you've got a lot coming up. So
I look forward to being with the other entertainers. It's fun to, you know, go out with a bunch of comedians after the show's over, you know, go to, IHOP or Waffle House, you know, someplace where the cook's outside smoking when you pull in the parking lot. You know, no, that's where the best food's at. You know,
that's when you know it's a real restaurant.
That's a real restaurant. If your cook is in the parking lot smoking a cigarette and kissing his girlfriend, you're going to get good food. So, yeah, but
there's many tips on this show, people.
It's full of wisdom.
But yeah, I love the after. You know, the show is fun. It's always fun to make people laugh. It's fun to have people tell you that you're funny and all that. But then I love going out and just hanging out with comics. Comics are the best people to hang out with because you sit around. Like I say, it's sort of that same atmosphere of sitting around on your couch laughing when you get three or four comics together at a Waffle House at 2 a.m. It's just hilariously funny. You know, the stuff that is not rehearsed or written down or nobody is trying to, worry about setups and punchlines and all that. It's just a natural flow of just picking on each other and laughing at each other and one joke breeds the next joke, breeds the next joke, breeds the next joke, and it just keeps, and sometimes they're not even funny, but just the fact that they're so absurd or funny. That's just my comedian high. I love that.
Yeah.
And it's the best when every table around you is completely annoyed too.
Yeah. That's good.
We're getting dirty looks from.
Yeah. Don, these people, June Colson, I did her show.
Yes.
In Kentucky with her and Robert G. Lee and all
June's
the.
June's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And so we went to Smokey Bones after it was over. And, you know, we got in there about 11 and we didn't leave till, you know, 12:45. And you know, that we laughed more at Smokey Bones than we did at the show, you know. So that's the best part.
Yeah, that is the best. It was kind of a fraternity sorority.
Yes, absolutely.
We get each other.
Yeah. You're around people that are as weird as you are.
So. Yes. My husband just said yesterday he was listening to one of the episodes with the comedians. He's like, there's something wrong with all of you.
That is a true statement. It is, like I said earlier, it is our therapy.
Well, speaking of live shows, I want to promote what you guys are getting ready to do, which is come perform at an X2 comedy show at one of our new events. It's the Outdoor Summer Fun Series at One Tribe Farm. It is going to be the second Fridays, June through October. Our kickoff event is June 11th, and these comedians that you've been listening to on this podcast episode will be performing at that event. And it's going to be super fun because we are going to have fresh off the farm food by their chef, Chef Jordan, and then live music by the band VS, then the comedy show, followed by more live music and food. So this is not something you're going to want to miss out on. They also have 10 cabins, little micro cabins on the property. So if you want to stay overnight, you can have a front seat to the show right off your cabin deck and enjoy all the festivities just steps away. So you're going to want to get those tickets so you can see Cornbread, Mike Moran, Christopher Cantrell, and myself as your host. And you can get those tickets right on the One Tribe Farm website. And one is not spelled out, O-N-E. It's the number one, tribefarm.com. Or you can go to x2comedy.com and get tickets. And find the event also on Facebook so you can get more information and tickets. Because you want the tickets. Don't they want the tickets?
They want the tickets.
They don't want to miss this.
Absolutely. By five.
Right. By what?
By five.
Yeah, by five. Take a whole group of friends. Everybody's been.
Bring your tribe to the One Tribe Farm.
Oh, such good marketing. This guy, I'm telling you, you need to do some classes or something. I mean, he's a marketing genius over here. We're going to be using that in some upcoming posts. I'm going to steal that. Thank you very much. Yes. So thank you guys. This has been great. Before we part, I'd like to ask each of you if you have any parting thoughts to share with the listeners, and also how they tell them how they can follow you on social media or otherwise, like if you have a website and that kind of thing. Cornbread, let's start with you.
Okay. On Facebook, I'm Kenny Lee Robinson. And there's another comedian. There's some other comedians out there with the same name. So that's why I use the Kenny Lee Robinson and Cornbread. I have two Facebook pages, but one primarily. Then also my schedule you can find at www.cornbreadthecomic.com. It has mostly just my past shows because of COVID, but it does have everything that I've got upcoming in 2021 is listed at the top of the website.
Is your YouTube clip on your website also? Because I just
it is not on my website. If you go to my Facebook, I try to post a video of one of my better shows about every 2 weeks, so you don't have to scroll too far down to see me. Or if you go to YouTube and just Google Cornbread the Comic, there's some clips out there that you can see.
Yes, he likes to wear colorful clothing.
I do like bright clothes. Yeah,
he does like bright clothes.
Bright clothes, simple mind.
Yeah. That's well said. Well said. How about you, Mike? How can we?
I'm on Instagram at Mike_Moran_comedy. But really most of my activity is just on my own Facebook page. It's for some reason it's turned out that way. Like whatever little following I have is just on my personal page. Do a lot of different things there. I ask the questions for the confessional there. And I also actually have a support group that I created called a support group for depression and anxiety where we eat cereal. And that is exactly what it sounds like. And if you know anyone that experiences those things, you can direct them there. And we got a nice little community going on there too.
Yeah, that sounds really good. I think people have been struggling with mental illness a lot with this COVID situation. So I encourage you to check it out. It's a really great community. You'll feel supported and I imagine laugh a lot too. So yeah, it sounds good. How about you, Christopher?
You can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at CSC, my initials, Christopher Stephen Cantrell, 21293, my birthday, if you're curious. My social security number is, those are the two socials, and that's it.
That's it. That's what he has to say. Isn't that interesting? Did you notice that? So Christopher's in mid-20s. You're about my son's age, aren't you? Around 20?
I'm 27.
Yeah. So my son's 28. Yep. We kind of have a similar like look. So people wonder if I'm his actual mother. That's actually happened a couple of times. But in social media wise, you can tell the difference. So our 27-year-old millennial over here, he's got the Twitter and the Instagram, and us old people have Facebook.
We're still on MySpace.
Yeah. But any parting thoughts? We missed that. Anything you want to, any last words to the listeners that you want to share? Don't all scream at once.
keep smiling, America. There you go.
Okay, that's good. All right. You got something?
Be kind.
Be kind. Like it. What about you, Cornbread?
Oh, let's see. Buy stock in Disney every month. When you get your paycheck, buy stock, buy $100 worth of stock in Disney. When you're my age, you'll be a millionaire. So that's my advice. Buy Disney stock every payday.
I'm so glad I asked the question. It's so great. We got so many tips off Cornbread today, don't we? I mean, really. I feel so much smarter today right now. Well, thank you guys. And lastly, and most importantly, thank you for tuning in, laughers. With all the podcasts out there you could have chosen, we are glad that you chose to be with us today. So thanks for listening. Until next time, keep smiling. Everyone say bye.
Bye.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Virginia is for Laughers podcast, brought to you by X2 Comedy. We'll be dropping a new podcast every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, so check back for another uplifting episode. Come to an X2 Comedy show or let us bring a show to you. To find out more, head to x2comedy.com. Be sure to share us with a friend. Until next time, cheers.